Our final case this afternoon is number 25-1409, Munoz v. HHS. Okay, Ms. Wilson.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Amber Wilson, and I'm here on behalf of Petitioner Appellant Richard Munoz. This appeal concerns the legal framework applied to the circumstantial evidence under Alfin. It is not a request to reweigh scientific evidence. The Chief Special Master was certainly permitted to evaluate petitioner's literature and expert testimony. The problem is not simply that the evidence was found insufficient. The problem is why it was deemed insufficient. The legal error is the benchmark against which the evidence was evaluated. The decision treated categories of circumstantial scientific evidence, case reports, mechanistic studies, known immune pathways, and biological plausibility as if legally insufficient unless the evidence independently established generalized causation. That is not merely weighing the evidence. That is a structural transformation of prong one under Alfin. Once the Chief Special Master concluded that this case wholly turned on prong one, the individualized causation inquiry contemplated by prongs two and three was effectively displaced by a dispositive generalized causation analysis at prong one. The problem was not just the critical review of evidence or that the special master was required to find it more persuasive. The issue is the evaluative framework applied to the circumstantial evidence under Alfin. While prong one does require a reputable medical theory showing that the vaccine can cause the injury, the issue is that the Chief Special Master transformed prong one from a threshold inquiry on a reputable medical theory into a dispositive generalized causation requirement. Under Alfin, can cause refers to whether a petitioner presented a reputable causal theory supported by circumstantial scientific evidence, not whether the science has already established generalized causation at the population level. The problem is not that the Chief Special Master just stopped on prong one. That is a legally valid principle. The problem is that the problem is that his analysis transformed what counts as sufficient support under prong one. The analysis effectively treated prong one by asking, has the circumstantial scientific literature established to a probability standard that vaccines can cause the injury alleged in the general population? That is not the same as did petitioner's expert present a reputable theory supported by circumstantial scientific evidence. If prong one requires generalized scientific proof that the vaccine can cause the disease across the population before circumstantial scientific evidence can materially support causation, then Alfin's three-pronged structure has effectively been collapsed into a single generalized causation inquiry.
But I may be confused by your position, but if the expert you had testified to a reasonable, reputable medical theory of causation, but the special master is not persuaded by it after hearing all the evidence, including the experts on the other side, are you saying the special master is supposed to find that Alfin prong one is nonetheless satisfied?
So, Your Honor, the prong one still requires a reputable medical theory supported by reliable scientific reasoning. Boatman and Gamboa still represent limiting principles. But unlike Boatman and Gamboa, this case is not an unsupported theory case. Here, the literature genuinely supported components of petitioner's theory.
Supported theory isn't sufficient. Boatman says the fact that it's plausible doesn't make it correct.
Your Honor, you're correct. Boatman and Cerrone do not hold that biological plausibility alone can automatically satisfy petitioner's ultimate burden across all three prongs. A petitioner's position is that biological plausibility is still a legally relevant component of a reputable medical theory under prong one, which then must be evaluated together with the individualized evidence under prongs two and three.
I think you've argued this before in other cases and lost, right?
No, Your Honor, I do not believe that Cerrone or that Boatman hold that biological plausibility is legally sufficient under prong one. And that's the problem here, Your Honor, is that effectively the decision stopped and stated that it wholly turned on prong one. So it evaluated the circumstantial evidence as to whether it evaluated the circumstantial evidence against the benchmark of generalized causation. When under the Act, the Alfin structure matters because off-table claims often involve incomplete science, uncertain mechanisms, rare injuries, and sparse proof at the general population level. If the phrase can cause under Alfin, it becomes proving the vaccine more likely than not at the general population level, then prong two loses its independent meaning, and the Act resembles more of a toxic tort general doctrine. Alfin allows inferential reasoning.
Not saying that the special master cannot ever rely just on prong one and end the analysis. You're just saying that in this case it was inappropriate to do so.
Correct, Your Honor.
And you think that in doing so, the special master read more into what was required by prong one. Is there a particular language that you think supports that?
Well, I think that the language that the special master used on Apex 18 is very clear that he was looking for a component of the Tdap vaccine to be more likely than not capable of causing the specific biological mechanism. And it's not, Your Honor, that there is not a distinction. There is a distinction here. Boatman and Gamboa do support that a special master can reject a case. Unsupported theories, however, lacked evidentiary grounding. Scientifically incomplete theories, which is what we have here, remain inferential and unresolved in some respects, but are still anchored in converging scientific and medical evidence. Here, the theory was treated as insufficient not because the science remains incomplete, but because the circumstantial literature failed to support generalized causation.
It also said other things, too. The special master said other things, too, in that paragraph you're relying on, right?
Yes, Your Honor. The special master...
It's too many speculative assumptions and things like that. There's other language, right? It has to be all read in context, right?
Well, that is correct, Your Honor. It is the totality. But if you look at the decision actually atomized each of those categories of circumstantial scientific evidence, and then looked at them and decided that because the evidence was incomplete, indirect, or non-definitive, that it could not meet the legal burden. But the Vaccine Act expressly contemplates causation claims involving incomplete science and circumstantial scientific evidence. Under Alfin, circumstantial evidence does not mean unsupported speculation. It means the causal question is answered cumulatively through multiple converging sources of scientific and medical evidence. Doles is actually quite on point here because Doles reinforced that relevant scientific evidence cannot be functionally sidelined merely because it is indirect or incomplete. But that is exactly what happened here. The problem is not just that the evidence was found insufficient. It is how the conclusions were reached and why. Circumstantial evidence retains legal significance under Alton, even if no single study or the mechanism can conclusively resolve the causal question. Here, both a biologically plausible mechanism and published case reports materially supported experts' theory under Alton. A biological mechanism explains how the injury can occur, and case reports then show how the injury occurred in real patients. Together, they provide reliable evidence that the causal theory being proposed is medically sound. This, respectfully, is not a case of weak evidence being improperly elevated. This is a case where direct clinical observations were discounted because they did not match perfectly petitioner's facts. That is not the same as did petitioner's expert present a reputable theory supported by circumstantial scientific evidence.
Can you talk just for a moment about the competing experts? Because the special master did see their testimony and seems to have found the government's experts more credible and persuasive. Don't we have to review that deferentially?
Again, Your Honor, respectfully, the error here is not that the special master reviewed the evidence or that he found it more persuasive. The error is the benchmark against which he evaluated the evidence and the framework. So even though he says that he looked at the totality of the evidence, it is the manner and the method with which he looked at that that is erroneous under Alton. The Vaccine Act was designed because definitive scientific proof often does not exist, because vaccine injuries are understood to be rare, and because mechanisms may remain incomplete. If all of the circumstantial evidence is then discounted categorically because it is incomplete, indirect, or not definitive, then only generalized scientific proof can be sufficient. That is the problem. It is not simply that petitioner's evidence was found insufficient, but the evidence was evaluated against a benchmark that required a level of scientific conclusiveness that Alton specifically recognized would often be unavailable in vaccine cases under the Act. Gonna save my time for rebuttal.
Sure.
Thank you.
Ms. Kurosh?
Yes, good afternoon. Nassim Kurosh for respondent. May it please the court. Your Honors, there is no reversible error in this case. The Chief Special Master did his job. He applied the correct legal standard. He considered the entire record. He thoughtfully weighed the evidence, and he drew rational inferences. There is no reading under which his findings are wholly implausible. And of course, on appeal, the standard of review is highly deferential. This court does not reweigh the evidence, second guess the Chief Special Master's fact-intensive conclusions, or substitute its judgment for that of the Chief Special Master. Of course, petitioner is entitled to a different view, but petitioner cannot point to any evidence that the Chief disregarded or overlooked, and in fact has not identified any error whatsoever in the Chief Special Master's decision, just his disagreement with the result. But that is not grounds for review.
Well, their argument is that there is a higher level standard that was applied, right? And so what is your basis for saying, no, the regular standard was applied?
Well, I don't think petitioner's argument finds any basis in the decision itself. If we read the decision itself, it's clear that the Chief Special Master correctly articulated the preponderance standard. And if I could for a moment, Your Honor, I'll just do a slight detour here to discuss plausibility versus preponderance before I get into the specific factual findings. But my friend in argument here mentioned plausibility several times. This court has articulated on numerous occasions that plausibility is a lower standard than preponderance, and it is not acceptable, including on Alton Prong 1 specifically. That goes as far back as Moberly in 2010, Lalonde in 2014, Boatman in 2019, Kalogic in 2024, Cerrone in 2025. So plausibility is is lower than preponderance and is not acceptable. This court has articulated that several times, and that's, of course, consistent with the Vaccine Act itself, which sets forth the preponderance standard. And actually, on review to the claims court here, the petitioner again argued that plausibility can somehow be grafted onto preponderance, and the claims court rightly rejected that argument. It said that, this is the appendix at 28, grafting plausibility onto preponderance would make little, if any, sense in light of the Federal Circuit's repeated rejection of plausibility as distinct from and impermissibly lower than preponderance. So preponderance is absolutely the standard, Your Honors. As to petitioner's assertion that the chief elevated the standard above preponderance, I mean, petitioner hasn't pointed to any actual indication in the decision that that's the case. And I think if we look at the decision, it's clear that, first of all, the chief specifically said he's not demanding scientific certainty. That's the appendix at page 10. He correctly recited the standard, and there's no indication whatsoever. And to be clear, Your Honor, it's petitioner's burden to identify anywhere where the chief special master did so to demand scientific certainty, definitive evidence, direct evidence, complete or conclusive proof. I mean, these are assertions that petitioner is making. These are arguments that petitioner is making, but there's no basis in the decision for them, and petitioner doesn't point to any specific issue, any specific instance where this might have happened. They're just sort of generalized, conclusory assertions. And I'll note also, I mean, this court said as far back as Hodges in 1993 that when a special master denies a petitioner's claim, that doesn't mean the special master was demanding certainty. It just means the special master determined that the petitioner did not carry the burden as to preponderance. And I think that's exactly what happened here.
Can you just help me at Alton prong one?
Yes, Your Honor.
What exactly is it that you think they have to prove by preponderance to get to move on to prongs two and three?
They have to prove, Your Honor, that the vaccine at issue can cause the condition or injury at issue. So prong one, we often refer to as general causation. It's the can cause prong. In theory, in general, can this vaccine, this specific vaccine, cause this specific disease?
No, it's not can, it's whether it does, right?
Well, it's distinct. I say it's can and general because it's distinct from prong two, which would be, okay, once we've established on prong one that it can, then we ask on prong two. In this specific case, prong two
does
is what
it,
we call specific causation.
Does it in general cause this kind of injury? Not in some hypothetical sense, could it?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's what the preponderance standard means. It means not just hypothetically could it, but have you proven more likely than not, meaning greater than 50%, can it cause it? Even if it's rare, can it happen? That's the general causation prong. That's prong one. Prong two is, okay, even assuming it can, let's say you've proven prong one, did it in this particular case, looking at this particular patient, their clinical course, their manifestation, was their condition caused by the vaccine in this case? And then prong three sort of takes a piece of both prong one and prong two. It looks like it looks at a medically appropriate time frame. It says, okay, if this vaccine can cause this injury, what's the time frame in which we expect onset to occur? And then we look at prong two, the particular clinical course in this case, and we say, is that what happened here? So those are the three prongs. They're all distinct. I certainly don't think it's the case, as petitioner suggested, that they can be collapsed into one. And on any prong, if any prong is not met, then petitioner's claim is denied, because petitioner's burden is to prove each prong by preponderant evidence. And again, this court has said that many times in many cases, including Oliver in 2018. Even going back to Alfin, Dobrydnev in 2014, and then Alfin itself in 2005. It's a conjunctive three-prong test proven by preponderance. So a failure to meet any prong results in denial of the claim, and that's what happened here.
How does attorney's fees work in these cases?
Your Honor, attorney's fees are decided after an entitlement ruling or a decision, and it has to do with reasonable basis in the case. So we're not there yet. If there's good faith and reasonable basis, then typically...
Who makes the reasonable basis determination?
Excuse me?
Who makes the reasonable basis determination?
The special master, Your Honor.
The special master.
Yes, after the merits are decided.
So the special master is asked to award fees both before the special master and the Court of Federal Claims and on appeal?
Correct. And actually, I should correct myself, Your Honor, because sometimes there are interim attorney's fees and costs.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, they're awarded after the merits. And yes, it does have to do with the appeal as well. The special master decides.
And so there's a reasonable basis is the standard?
Yes, so reasonable basis and good faith, reasonable basis being objective and good faith being subjective. And then if those two things are met, they also review the costs themselves for reasonableness. So if I could just return for a minute to Judge Stoll's question about the particulars of this case, I want to address Doles briefly. Petitioner mentioned Doles, and it's mentioned in his reply brief as well. I think that case, which is from this court last year, it's a non-precedential case, it essentially just says that a special master can't be barred from relying on particular evidence. So in that case, there was a claims court judge that essentially directed the special master not to rely on certain literature that he wanted to rely on. And this court said, well, that's not permissible. And I think that's a pretty unremarkable proposition. I don't think it really has any effect on this case. There is a particular discussion in Doles of statistical significance, but that wasn't an issue in this case. There was actually no statistical evidence presented, and the chief special master didn't discuss it. So I think that issue of a special master being barred from relying on evidence didn't occur here, and that case is not really on point. I do want to discuss the particulars also with respect to mechanism. So again, the chief special master did not require any particular type of evidence. And in fact, he specifically said that. Again, this is the appendix at page 10. He specifically said petitioners don't have to provide any particular type or category of evidence, which is correct. That's consistent with this court's case law. Petitioner's primary evidence in this case was mechanistic evidence. It was a purported mechanism of vaccine injury. But what the chief special master found was that it was very, very nonspecific and very unsupported. And it was quite thin. I mean, I think, you know, this court has said, for instance, in Brokelshen in 2010, this court talked about specificity. It said that because causation is relative to the injury, petitioner must provide a reputable medical or scientific explanation that pertains specifically to the petitioner's case. That didn't occur here. Basically, petitioner's expert sort of generally described some immune system characteristics or processes, but didn't provide any evidence that's specific to the Tdap vaccine and the condition at issue here, which is polymyalgia rheumatica, PMR. And so, for instance, the chief special master talked about this. He said that Dr. F. Timiu proposed a mechanism that was based on, quote, an antigen-specific antibody and genetic susceptibility. But he actually offered no evidence on either of those points, not on an antigen, not on an antibody, and he also offered no evidence on particular genetic susceptibility in this case. So he was just kind of throwing out general terms, but not in any way providing detail such that his theory was substantiated and supported. And I also want to just briefly address here the point about circumstantial evidence. Petitioner mentioned circumstantial evidence many times. I don't think the chief special master discounted circumstantial evidence. I actually don't think he could. I don't think any special master could. This is referred to in our brief, page 19, note 7. But I'll just state briefly. I mean, as to direct versus circumstantial evidence, direct evidence is evidence that is observed with one's own senses, right? Whereas circumstantial evidence is evidence we infer, having not directly observed. But I think under prong one in a vaccine case, you're almost never going to have direct evidence because it's nearly impossible for a person to observe with their own eyes and ears, their own senses, the microbiological processes that are happening inside the body. So on prong one, on theory, on medical theory, we're almost always going to have circumstantial evidence. That's what special masters are considering day in and day out. And so I don't think there's ever an issue with evidence being circumstantial. I think the problem in this case was the quality and quantity of the evidence. It was lacking on both fronts. And that's why the chief special master concluded, this is in the appendix at 18, he said, petitioner's evidence only somewhat allowed for a faint possibility of vaccine causation. So I think that's the issue here. And I'll also just address briefly, in addition to the mechanism, the chief special master addressed really the only other thing that petitioner put forward, which was a couple of medical articles that were essentially case reports. These are the Falsetti and Soriano articles. So again, petitioner sort of quarrels with the chief special master calling these weak evidence. But he was entitled to do that. I mean, that's a part of his intrinsic powers as a fact finder to weigh the evidence. But also it's consistent even with this court's precedents. I mean, if you look at, for instance, Porter in 2011, this court said that case reports provide no meaningful causation analysis. And there are many decisions from the claims court, from special masters, that recognize the same thing. I think that's well understood, that case reports are some of the weakest form of evidence in medicine and science. But he looked at two of the articles in this case, Falsetti and Soriano. He looked specifically at, for instance, admissions that Dr. Eftimio, petitioner's expert, made about those articles, how they don't present reliable conclusions. One of them is a case report involving a flu vaccine and PMR relapse that just sort of refers to another unpublished case report of a Tdap vaccine. So these were all just kind of not on point, overall weak evidence. And I think he was, you know, very much within his rights to find them as such. That's his province as fact finder. So he definitely considered all of the evidence. I will also just say briefly, petitioner, my friend in argument here, just mentioned general population and population level data several times. Just to be clear, there were no epidemiological studies presented in this case, so I don't think that's actually an issue here. But this court, again, has found on several occasions, including Grant in 2011, Andreu in 2009, that epidemiological evidence is relevant, and where it exists, it certainly can be probative on prong one. But there wasn't any at issue here, so I don't think that that's really salient to our inquiry. On the point about the evidence being stronger than it was in Boatmon, petitioner makes this argument in his brief as well, and it's addressed in the government's brief. This is pages 19 to 20 at note 8. Petitioner's burden is not just to present evidence that is better than the evidence that was rejected in another case. Petitioner has to present evidence that is preponderant in this case, and the chief special master found that that didn't occur. And sort of on a related note, petitioner contended in his brief, and I think maybe not as explicitly an argument, but said that the preponderance standard is an impossible burden. So this is addressed in the government's brief, pages 15 to 16 at note 5. I think that's demonstrably untrue. The petitioners have prevailed in countless cases before special masters. So it's certainly not an impossible burden. It's very possible, and many petitioners do it. It just didn't occur here. And lastly, Your Honors, I just want to address the points about Althan prongs 2 and 3. Petitioner argued in his brief that this court should go ahead and make some findings of fact on Althan 2 and 3, and find in favor of petitioner grant entitlement to petitioner. This is addressed in the government's brief. This is pages 29 to 30, but that wouldn't be appropriate here. Appellate fact-finding is generally ill-advised, and I think that if this court were to find that prongs 2 and 3 do need to be decided, then remand is the appropriate remedy. But I don't think that's necessary because, again, the chief special master did his job, and there's no error here, and there's nothing to review. So, again, we would ask that the court affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Wilson?
Thank you, Your Honor. I do understand the respondent's position is that the special masters correctly articulated the preponderance standard. The issue in this case is not the standard. It's the evaluative framework that was applied. Petitioners are not saying that you can collapse all of the prongs. What we are saying is that...
Where is there language in the special master's opinion suggesting that he applied the wrong standard?
The petitioner is not arguing, Your Honor, that the special master expressly articulated that he was requiring scientific certainty. The concern is that the circumstantial evidence was repeatedly treated as insufficient, and so the framework that applied here functionally treated all of the evidence as if it needed to independently resolve remaining scientific uncertainty.
Where in the opinion are you gathering that? As a result, you say this is not about weighing the evidence. It's not about the conclusion that was reached. It's about the methodology that was used. So there should be something you should be able to point to.
Well, correct. I mean, I think that the largest or clearest indication of the framework error is that the analysis never really progressed beyond generalized causation. And also the language that the special master uses, more likely than not, can cause is asking for him to prove that the disease can generally be caused at the population level. And that is the problem here, Your Honor. This case is distinguished.
Why isn't that not, I mean, can cause is the test, and more likely than not is the burden of proof. So why isn't that just putting the burden of proof in front of the test?
Yes, Your Honor, I do understand that that those are the semantics. The problem is that when you, the problem is that the vaccine program is, and under Alfin, the focus is really on individualized causation. So when prong one becomes prove the vaccine more likely than not at the general level, then we've lost the independent meaning of the individualized circumstantial evidence. And so that in and of itself has transformed prong one from did the petitioner's expert present a reputable theory supported by circumstantial evidence into did the petitioner's expert prove generalized causation in the scientific literature.
Thank you. Thank you.